Gentlemen, welcome back. My name's Tom, I'm an alcoholic. Little bit of housekeeping. For those of you that have just arrived or not familiar, the toilets are outside the door, turn right. And there are also some down the stairs in the house. Smoking outside, butts in the sand, fill buckets, please. And there are fire exits each end of the building, just up there and behind the stage there. I've asked Sonia to read the preamble.
Thank you. My name is Sonia and I'm an alcoholic. The AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you, Sonia. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce our fourth old-timer, Sonia, from Tuesday Night Beaconsfield. And Sonia tells me Ian was the first old-timer you came across. And the first meeting you went to was Shenfield on a Tuesday, Shenfield in Essex. So, yes, over to you, and thank you very much for coming to join us today. Oh,
thank you very much. I don't really know where to start. I could, if I had come into AA when I qualified, I would have been sitting here saying I'm over 60 years sober. But, of course, I was having far too good a time to even contemplate coming into AA. In fact, it just never occurred to me. Very briefly, I didn't start drinking until I was 18, because in those dim and distant days, we tended not to. So 18 was the legal age, and that's when you might consider going into a pub and having a drink. And when I was 18, I had a date with a new boyfriend, first time out. He was a few years older than I was, so I thought, oh, quite a man of the world. He had a car, and he took me to Slough and for a pub call. I mean, he knew how to give a girl a good time, obviously. But I had just not had anything to do with drink up until that day, so I just... I knew you could have something like gin and orange or something, and I would have these drinks. So, first date, first drink, first drunk, first being sick in his car going home, and the next day the first monumental hangover. Oh, that's quite a lot to cope with all on one day. And the amazing thing is that he actually asked me out again for a second date, and subsequently we were married for 62 years. So it says something about somebody's strength of mind, not mine. But I was never a good drinker. I was always a messy drinker. Always had the most awful hangovers, always threw up. And yet I, of course, carried on. And somebody said to me once, well, you know, why do you do it? But I never, ever said no. If somebody said, do you want a drink? I'd say, yes, please. And, you know, in those days, you'd be with a crowd of friends in the pub, and they'd be saying, drink, Sonia? Yes, please. Put it there. Drink, Sonia? Yes, please. Put it there. I'd have them lined up. And it never occurred to me that my friends who didn't get sick, didn't have hangovers, used to say, no, thank you, I've got one. Just didn't sink in. So the weakness for drink was obviously there. And of course, in my mind, it did a lot for me. When you're only 5 foot nothing, you want to be 6 feet blonde, beautiful. And that's what a drink did for me in my head. And it's strange stuff because my sponsor, who is about 6 feet tall, said when she had a drink, it made her 5 foot nothing. So it's clever stuff, this. But by the time I was 30, I knew that I had a problem. I decided I was an alcoholic. I didn't know I had a problem. I accepted I was an alcoholic because I read one of these questionnaires, very much like our Who Me questionnaire, in a magazine, and ticked the yes, 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 yes. And about the only one I said no to was, have you ever lost a job? But then I hadn't had a job, so I hadn't got that to lose. So I said to myself, well, there you are, Sonia, you're an alcoholic. So I'm an alcoholic, so what? No idea at all what an alcoholic was. I knew it was a person who drank too much. I could accept that, but I had no idea of the mental compulsion that there is and the spiritual compulsion effect that there is. I only knew, of course, the physical effects of drink, and that's because I was sick. So I said to myself, well, yes, you're going to have to do something about your drinking, but not today. Perhaps next week I'll start. I was living overseas where drinking was quite very much the norm. You know, coffee mornings would start with a gin and tonic and things like that. And we didn't really have much coffee. But so it was accepted to drink. A lot of people got drunk. So it was with all that drink around. I mean, yeah, it was silly to think about giving it up at the time. And that's how it went on then for another 12 years. It's not, yes, I must give it up, and I am an alcoholic, but not yet. And of course, inevitably, things got worse, the only way they can do if you carry on drinking. And that's when I started stopping. The only difference was that instead of being a daily drinker, I became a bout drinker. And inevitably, again, the bouts would get, the stopping would get shorter, the bouts would get bigger. Until, but by this time we were living back in England, and I had to keep a good reputation where we lived. I couldn't let people know what a mess I was becoming, because inside I knew I was a pretty worthless individual. So I became known as the lady who does the good works. You want flags sold? Yes, I'll go around selling flags, I'll go around selling poppies, I'll do Reels on Wheels, anything to try and prove to the neighbours, and of course I'll always go to church on a Sunday to prove to my neighbours what a good person I was. And of course it was all a sham. But part of my doing good and becoming, trying to put on an impression, I became a Samaritan. And I mean, right, so they all make mistakes too. And part of the pre-preparing course before I was accepted, there was a talk given by a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I cowered in the back row when she was giving this talk. I thought, she'll know, she'll look at me, she'll know I'm an alcoholic. And I sort of kept my head down, wouldn't do anything. And in fact, while I was doing my stint in the Samaritans, I did get involved with one or two alcoholics. And I remember saying to one of them, Well, there are AA meetings. I'll take you along if you like. I'll come with you. I wasn't thinking about her. I really wanted to go for myself, but I hadn't got the courage to own up to do that. I wanted an excuse to go, but my alcoholic never, that woman never went to AA. But eventually it got, you know, my husband came home one day, and I happened just to fall over on the kitchen floor as he walked in, and he said, "What's the matter with you?" I said, "I'm an alcoholic." I mean, I wasn't telling him anything he didn't know, but I must say he had the greatest restraint. He never once in all my drinking career threw it back at me. He never shouted at me. He would say, "Well, try not to drink too much when we're doing this." He said, "If you want a drink, let's have a drink together before we go out, and then you can do it." And he picked me up off the floor on this particular occasion, and he said, What's the matter with you?" So I said, "I'm an alcoholic, and so what are you going to do about it?" He said, "Shall we go to an AA meeting?" And I thought, yes, I would give it a go. Now, at that time, there were two AA meetings. I was living in Essex, and there were two AA meetings within reasonable distance of my home. There was one in Southend, say 12, 15 miles in one direction. There was one in Shenfield, about the same distance in the other direction. And if any of you know that part of the world, Shenfield is posh. So, of course, I couldn't go to a common meeting like they would have in Southend. I would go to the posh meeting in Shenfield. So that shows the state of mind that I was in at the time. I didn't know where the meeting was, so my husband said, "Well, he would go in his car, I could follow him," which is what we did, and I sat in the car. I could hardly see. I was crying, and it was like being driving in a thunderstorm with visibility. And we got to where this meeting was held, at the Friends Meeting House in Shenfield, and I sat in the car park, crying, and he went in to find somebody to come to see, you know, to come meet me. And he said to me, "You know, you don't have to go in here if you don't want to." And I thought, well, I've come this far, I might as well. And that was one of the best things I ever did, to accept that I needed the help of AA. It was quite a small meeting in there, and that was where I met somebody who had been sober for 6 years, which to me was absolutely unbelievable. I could say sober, not that's the wrong word, I could stay dry for 2 or 3 months, but for someone not to have had a drink for 6 years seems unbelievable to me. But so he was our longest sober member. And from that first meeting, I got hope. And I got hope for really a very funny reason, because there was also another newcomer at that meeting, a woman. And whereas at least I had not had a drink for about 3 days when I went to the meeting, she was still very, very drunk, poor soul. And I got hope because I thought, well, she's come to the meeting, she's very drunk, and she is hoping to get better. So maybe there is a chance that I will get better, because I've already got, I mean, I didn't know it at the time, but haven't got any drink inside me now. And that was the thing that started the hope for me. And the other thing that I learned there that day was the Serenity Prayer. And I looked at it and I thought, well, that is the most sensible prayer I have ever seen in my life. And it stuck with me ever since. And my goodness, I must have worn it out over the years, because occasionally things happen. And the only thing I have been able to say over and over and over and over is the Serenity Prayer to help me get through whatever the situation is. And to me, it's a wonderful prayer. And in fact, I gave a little copy of it for my husband in his office, and somebody came in and said, oh, that's a very sensible prayer. I think, can you get me a copy? I mean, they didn't know it was associated with AA, but they just thought, well, that's a good prayer. So he'd scattered a few of them around his office. I carried on going to this meeting. I didn't drink. So after about 6-7 months, I felt I got a bit busy. Because when you're not drinking, you feel better, you get on and do more things. I got busy, a little bit too busy, to spend 2 hours a week at a meeting. But anyway, I didn't really need it now. I mean, I was cured. Thank you very much, AA. Goodbye. And I carried on not drinking until some friends popped in, and I poured them a whiskey. And I thought, well, and I was drinking ginger ale, because I didn't want anybody to think that I was not drinking whiskey. And whiskey for them, ginger ale for me. And I thought, you know, a splash of whiskey in this ginger ale would make all the difference. Well, it did. It did make all the difference. It just put me back on this merry-go-round of drinking again. So AA had obviously failed. So that my next port of call was to go and see a psychiatrist. I thought, well, we'll see what the medical people can do. And I went to see this chap, gave him a whole spiel, and he said to me, I don't think you are an alcoholic. He said, could you stop drinking for a year? And I thought, yes, I could do that. So he said, well, I think if you stop drinking for a year, you'll be all right. Well, that was a miserable, rotten, lousy year, I can tell you. I resented all the drinks that anybody else were enjoying, and I was sticking rigidly to this Coke. And at the end of the year, well, actually 11 and a half months, I have to be absolutely honest, I said, well, 11 and a half months, a year, not much difference. I can have a glass of wine with dinner tonight. And of course, I don't have to tell you what happens. Straight back into the drinking. And of course, every time it's worse. So I was abroad at that time, but we came back to live in England very shortly afterwards. And I thought, well, there's only one place I can go to where I have not really heard anything, but I have seen the smiling faces of people there. And I could remember the faces. And so I came back to AA. And we had just moved into Buckinghamshire by then. And I started going to the meeting in High Wycombe. And it was a small meeting, as most of them were in those days. Not very structured, but we'd have a speaker and then people would share or not share as they felt like it. I was a not sharer, because by that time I was too scared to say a word. And a woman started coming into the meeting. She'd moved down into the area from Scotland, and she was about 15 years sober. And she didn't know anybody, but she said to me, oh, you know, can I come round and have coffee with you one day? I said, lovely, lovely, it'd be very nice to do that. And I thought she wanted to come round and chat, as one did in coffee mornings. Not that I knew much about coffee mornings, but anyway, she came round and appointed herself as my sponsor. Excuse me. And she taught me the best lesson I have ever had in AA. As I say, she was 15 years sober. I think she could quote the big book by heart. She very intelligent woman. And I thought she was God, because she knew it all. And she said to me, you know, well, we do have the 12 steps of recovery. I said, yes, I've read those. She said, but there's a little bit more to do than just reading them. And we started working on the steps. But the biggest lesson that she taught me was that after 15, 16 years of sobriety, she picked up a drink again. Why, I don't know. I never did ask her. But what a lesson it taught me, because she nearly died. It was horrendous for me to see this person who I had, you know, worshipped almost above all, deteriorate like she did. I am glad to say that eventually she came back into the fellowship and had many years of sobriety before she died. But that lesson she taught me was that we are never, never free from alcoholism. We will never, ever be able to pick up a drink, however long we've been away from it. And I know that we always say, well, if you have a drink, the door swings both ways, but it doesn't. People have a drink, they might want to come back, but they can't get back, because they're so much in the claws of alcohol. So, fortunately, as I said, she did get some sobriety, and I learned the big, big lesson. And it's one that I have never forgotten. I know I am as vulnerable now to drink as to the day I stopped. It was 40 years ago. That's amazing to me for a start. And coming into this fellowship, as I think for all of us, just changed my life. Not long after I joined, the Beaconsfield group started on a Tuesday night, and I went to the first meeting, and it suited, I liked it. It was not too far from where I was living, and I still go to Beaconsfield on a Tuesday night, and it has to be something very, either illness or the fact I'm not in the area, it will keep me away. And I know I have been transformed, is really the word, because when I came into the fellowship, I couldn't speak to anybody. If I was shopping, I couldn't go to say to a shopkeeper, please, how much is this? I used to just plonk it down and wait for him to say 2 and 4 pence, or whatever. That shows my age, however much it was going to be. Because I should say, perhaps they think I'm foreign and can't speak the language. Well, I couldn't speak the language, just too scared and frightened. And now, as you see, I do rabbit on a bit. One thing about the Beaconsfield group, it was very small, of course, in the early days, but we were all picked on to share. After the speaker, our names were called and we had to say something. All right, if you were very brave, you could say pass. But I was never that brave, and I always had to say some sort of thing. But it did me good. It taught me how to actually open my mouth and say something. As things progressed, I was asked if I would be treasurer. Me and figures are dreadful. And it used to take me hours to add up and sort the money out. And if we got something like 10 shillings for the first collection, that was big money. But it would take me ages to do it. But I stuck with it and subsequently became the secretary there, which taught me to go up and ask people to do something, because I had never done that before. And to have to approach somebody that I didn't necessarily know all that well, or even if I did know them well, say, please, could you come and do a chair for me on Tuesday? And of course, being good AAs, what do they say? Of course I can, unless they obviously couldn't, but you know, they were happy to do that. Taught me to speak to other people. And just about that time, the intergroups split up, and we became Chiltern and Thames, and the Oxford area and the Reading area, because we were all one in those days, became the three separate intergroups. And I was asked to be the hospital liaison officer for our intergroup. Again, total panic, because I had never had any experience of hospitals. Fortunately, my health has been brilliantly good, so I, you know, didn't know anything about hospitals. So and I had to go meet these various medical people in the various hospitals in our area to see about getting an AA presence there. And again, God works in very mysterious ways, as they say. The first consultant I wrote to, in Stoke Mandeville Hospital, I wrote him our letter and said that, and his letter came whizzing back. He says, I've been waiting for you to get in touch with us for years. He had come from Liverpool, I think, where they had a very good liaison with the AA and hospitals, and he was, you know, wondering why wasn't it in this area. So that was a great start for me. And I have been since then been involved in other things, because and all my life in AA I have volunteered for nothing. But when I've been asked, I'm such a wimp, I have to say, yes, I'll try. And now I don't think I can't say that people have benefited from what I have tried to do for them, but my God, I've benefited myself. Everything I have been asked to do has helped me grow and become more confident, and you know, I feel privileged now to be asked, to have been asked to do, you know, go into prisons, do forget what I have done now, but get involved in the various things. I'm not saying this to brag. I'm not bragging, because I always did this in fear and trembling. But I'm trying. To me, accepting any form of service in AA is the best way for me to help keep one's sobriety, I think. Certainly was in my case. And the two jobs in AA that I have done that I still feel were the best ones was being the tea maker at the group. I loved doing that, and they had to finally kick me out after I'd done it for 3 years. I loved it because I got to know everybody in the group. You knew, you take coffee, do you take tea, so on, and got to talk to them, which I would not have done if I'd stayed on the outside. And the other thing that also is telephone duty, and answering the telephone to newcomers. Again, I don't know whether I've done them any good, but one or two have stayed, and when they come up to you years later and say, I remember you, you were the first person I spoke to in the fellowship, you think, you know, it is working. And in the early days, telephone duty, you had it for a whole week, 24 hours. I mean, obviously, we couldn't cover it for that length of time, but that was how long we would have it. My family got quite involved, and I remember one day I'd had to go shopping. My son must have been holiday time. My son was home from school, and he'd be about 14, 15 at the time. And he said, "Oh, while you were out, we had one of your lot on the phone." He said, "Well, I talked to her for about an hour, and I think she felt better afterwards." I have no idea who it was, but he knew that that's what you had to do, because I had always taken my children, had come to AA meetings, and Nick particularly, I took him to Jersey to the convention over there, which. And I said, "You can do what you like when we get over, except you must come at least to one meeting." And that was, so he did know a little bit about it. Didn't understand the concept of anonymity, because I got a call one day from somebody who says, "Well, you don't know me, but Nick, your son, tells me that you're a member of AA." And, she felt she had a problem. And I thought, "Oh, well, I couldn't be that anonymous." And he didn't appreciate that. But it didn't matter. It didn't matter. And in fact, it was my husband who said to me, "You don't have to keep quiet about the fact that you are in AA and that you are an alcoholic, because it lets people see that an alcoholic is not necessarily a dirty, drunken lump of humanity. An alcoholic can be a fairly reasonable, clean, honest member of humanity." And so I've taken that to heart, and if people ask about why don't you drink, well, I don't drink because I'm an alcoholic. Sometimes it shuts them up for a bit, but then the interest starts. But I'm not ashamed of that now. In fact, in the village where I live now, somebody decided to start an AA group. We hadn't got one in the village. She must have been in AA for about 3 weeks when she decided this would be a good idea. So she put notices up in half the shops. She found a meeting place. AA meeting to start on Monday whenever. Any queries, phone this number. My number. I didn't even know this is what was happening. And I'm not that well known in the village, but one or two people did recognise the number. And some years later, a friend said to me, "Oh, are you still in that AA group thing?" I said, "Yes." He said, "How long have you been going?" I said, "I don't know." At that time, I told him the number of years. And he said, "Oh, how boring." Now, that chap died of his rich, full life was spent every day, every evening, sitting down, a bottle of gin, a bottle of orange squash, get through that, and then he'd go to bed. That was his rich, full life. As I say, he's dead. But my life has been far from boring since I've been in the fellowship. To begin with, I have friends everywhere. Friends I don't know, I haven't met yet, and of course my dearest friends are in my home group. I was contemplating moving away from the area some years back now. We were going to change houses, and we found the dream house over near Newbury. It was just perfect, everything that we wanted. And things were going along towards getting this place, and I was having an evening out with some of my friends. They'd actually come round to me for dinner. And as we were breaking up and saying goodbye, I thought, I'm never going to be able to do this again with these people. I mean, not like we were doing. And I cancelled the move. I couldn't face getting out of the... I moved house, but not out of the area, because I didn't want to lose the tremendous love and friendship I had with that group of people. And even today, we are still the closest and dearest of friends. And for that, thank God. Now, I never had any problem with my higher power, because I was always a churchgoer. Used to pray to God Sunday mornings, please God, don't let me get drunk today. But as you know, it's quite impossible to cook the old roast and two without a bottle of something to hand. I was always drunk by lunchtime after I got back from church. So it didn't work. But my higher power, I'm happy to call God, but that is just my own personal feeling about it. But God is now my friend. As it happens, I don't go to church anymore. I've still got that to sort out. And but I do have such a close relationship with this God of my understanding. And I talk to him. I'm not a kneeling down, hands together, eyes closed person anymore. And, you know, I just say, well, come on, God, things are a bit sticky, give us a hand. Not very polite, I think, but he usually does. And it helps me, because I articulate what I am feeling at that time. And I am now a great believer in saying things out loud, because I think what's inside you just festers away and gets worse and worse. If you can say it, it floats away like those bubbles of things you see in comic strips, you know, the words floating, and I think they float away and off they've gone. The first real old-timer that I met, saying that's what we're supposed to be talking about, was a wonderful man called Wick, who had been, used to come to Beaconsfield. He'd been sober for about 40 years, and he was so wise and so gentle, and if any problems we had, you'd go and talk to him, and he'd very kindly explain whatever. He never criticised, he didn't always approve what we were necessarily doing, but he never criticised. But I think that was Wick. He would have been like that anyway, because I don't think wisdom necessarily comes with being an old-timer. The only thing that comes with being an old-timer is wrinkles, as far as I can see. But I suppose I've learned a bit. I've learned to keep my mouth shut. I suppose that's a bit of good wisdom. I've learned to think before I talk. And so, in that respect, that's the only thing I feel that I have learned. But I suppose I've learned serenity too. That's a great thing for me. I try to, as I say, keep your head when all about you are losing theirs. I don't stamp and rave and carry on, but then I never did. So it's, again, I've never been an angry person, so it's easy for me, I think, to cultivate a bit of serenity. It's not important. I have to remember that if something's going on and I don't like it, so what? You don't spell Sonia, G-O-D. And I have to let other people do what they want to do. Just because they're not doing what I want is quite immaterial. I think I've run out of things to say. I have two sponsors, being me, because my first sponsor, after the first sponsor I had, my second sponsor, who is still my sponsor, and we co-sponsor each other, moved away from the area, and I missed her so much. We didn't always talk, but she was always at the meeting and just say hello, and that was enough. When she moved out of the area, it was I felt her loss very much. We're still in close touch, we still meet up, but she's not there in the rooms on a Tuesday night. So solved that one by having a second sponsor, who again, don't always talk, but she is at the meeting every Tuesday. And just to be able to look across and say, hello, okay, is enough for me. And again, we co-sponsor each other, which is great. I owe everything in my life to this fellowship, because I would have been long dead or shut up in a lunatic asylum or what, but I would have not enjoyed the wonderful life that I have had up to now. And I know that I have a killer illness. It's affected my family, that drink has affected my family, not alcoholism in our case, but my 17-year-old niece was killed in a car crash, not because she was drunk or the driver of the car was drunk, but the drivers of the other car that hit them head on in a narrow section of the road were drunk. And so four young 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds were killed that night. My goddaughter was in a car and the driver had had a few drinks, hit a tree, and so alcohol killed her. My first son-in-law, he did have a problem, and he occasionally would ring me up and, you know, what shall I do, what can I do? I said, I'll get one of the men to come and see you, take you to an AA meeting. No, I can't do that. And he solved his drink problem by blowing his brains out. This is a killer illness, and I must never, ever forget that. No use pussyfooting around it. We suffer from alcoholism, we are dicing with death if we keep on drinking. And I don't want that. I enjoy life far too much. I had a shock, a bad year last year, because that was the year, just 12 months ago, that my husband died. But we'd been married for 62 years. Apart from a little bit in the middle, they were 62 wonderful, happy years. And my friends in AA have rallied round, given me all the support and help that I've needed. And again, I wouldn't have had that if I'd been drinking, stuck away. I wouldn't have had the marriage, I wouldn't have had anything if I'd carried on the way I was. So to me, I owe everything to this fellowship, and I hope to be able to stick with it as long as I can toddle and get to the meetings. And I'm always on the lookout for lifts to get, especially as Beaconsfield's about 15, 16 miles away now from where I live. I'm always glad when I hear that somebody in my village has decided to come into the fellowship, so I can always catch lifts. But I'm going to shut up now. I think I've gone on for long enough, and I think my voice is going to give out any minute. But thank you all very much. It's a great pleasure for me to have been able to come and share with you.
Thank you very much, Sonia. That was it was lovely to hear your story, and Just a couple of things I picked up on there. The power of the Serenity Prayer. I first came across the Serenity Prayer in a context completely away from AA, and was struck by its, its power. And I do see it crop up in different places. And I wholeheartedly agree with what you're saying about, after 40 years, it doesn't matter if it's 40 days, 40 weeks, or 40 years, we're still powerless. I also really love what you said about, when you were secretary, it sort of made you step outside your comfort zone, and you were sort of forced to speak to others. I know, speaking, from my experience, I felt, it's quite a daunting task when I first, did the secretarial job, but it did. It sort of taught me to assertiveness, I suppose, really. Knowing that your sponsor was there, that's it's not necessarily what's said sometimes, it's just a look or a presence there. And, this is a killer illness, let's not make any bones about it, really. But thank you very much indeed. We're going to have a bit of a break before we go on to the next speaker. And yes, I'll call everyone back, but do feel free to help yourself to a drink or whatever. And thank you very much.
Thank you.